Hey Jess, how's it going?
It's going okay on this swampy July 4th weekend.
Yeah, it's swampy out in LA, I hear. You're getting a little bit of the humidity and suffering the way I've been suffering.
Mm-hmm. Probably nowhere near what it is over on the East Coast, but like we're not used to it. We're soft.
You know, I haven't turned on my air conditioner since last year.
And well,
last summer was a brutally hot summer. I turned it on. I think I caved twice and I turned the AC on. But I'm trying to train myself. Well, one, Shan is like very heat tolerant. She's like a warm climate person. She's from a hot city, you know? And I'm trying to train myself because I think in the
Shan
future,
is a thriver.
She's like a plant. She's like a plant.
Yeah. Like one of those plants that you just can't like screw with.
Yeah, she is hardy. But I've generally not been as heat tolerant in my life, but I'm trying because I predict the future is going to be hot. Electricity is going to be expensive and I may want to move to a warm climate anyway. So I'm putting in the work
right
now.
You're going to have to get used to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heat. And my thing is humidity. There'd be so many places I could live, but I grew up in a dry climate. So the first summer I spent in Boston, I literally thought I was going to die.
Boston heat. Lately, I met up with Mike, you know, who's on the pod a lot.
Yeah.
Who lives out in LA. And I met up in Boston and it was the hottest day in Boston like ever.
Ugh.
And we couldn't step outside. It was crazy. Like, it was like, we just couldn't, even at night, it didn't even really get like tolerable. You know, it was like stepping into a warming oven. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because usually, like, you can sweat and it does something, but it's like having a damp towel constantly on you.
Yeah, yeah,
it's terrible.
Yeah, so I'm training. You know, I'm training because I think the future is going to be
it's going to be
worse, and electricity will be expensive, and you know, so all that stuff. But anyway, okay, that's neither here nor there. We're here to talk about punk ass husbands.
Oh wow. Came out with a swing. All right, let's go.
Punk ass husbands. Well, it's something you brought up. You said you want to just give a brief overview of this chat that you're in and the sort of like, you know, obviously on a completely no names basis without any sort of identifying details, but like you're telling me that you're hearing a lot about deadbeat punk ass husbands.
Yeah, a little bit of that. Just, I mean, I guess the big picture is like, as of last year and this year, a majority of the girls are now past 40, like just crossed the line into the 40s. And something about that shift, man, it flipped the don't give a fuck switch, like hard.
Off on them.
Yeah, on all of us, kind of.
Yeah.
And it's always been a good group. You know, it's like that's everyone's safe place, basically, right? You need to talk about anything, you know, those are your girls. Mm-hmm. Like what you bring into the chat, you know, stays in the chat. And we will wrestle this problem to the ground until we figure out what's gonna work.
Sure.
Everyone needs that, by the way.
That seems like a highly adaptive functional move, I gotta say. Mm-hmm. It's a good move.
Yep.
Sure.
Yeah. And we all knew each other for a very long time. We all went to high school together.
Wow.
So within a couple of years, we all grew up in the same place, went to the same high school. It's kind of funny. Like that's literally our only like link. Mm-hmm. We're all doing different things. Like not all of us are married even or have children. You know, no two people are in the same career.
How many people are talking about?
It's like 10 people.
Okay. Yeah.
Smart. Yeah. More or less. Like there's other, and you know how these things go. Like there's a main chat and then like the different satellite, smaller working groups.
Yeah. Sure.
Form.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a separate one that's just, you know, cause we, our thing is now like, tea hopping. So it's a little weird. Somebody's like really, you know, laying out all the problems in her marriage. And then all of a sudden like, hey, there's a new oolong place out in Covina.
Right. Right. You don't want to break a good discussion off into a tangent about
a
new tea spot. Yeah.
Yeah, and I suspect this is how, like, this is how most people's group chats go these days. Mm-hmm. Sure. But something like, and so it's always been a good group, but there always was a, I don't want to say reserve, but like a little bit more consideration that not everyone's in the same place. So most of the girl, like the earliest who married at 25, and she was the extreme outlier. No one in the early group even. In terms of early, yeah. Yeah. The next person who married was like 36, you know?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, and then like that's when, crazy, you know, man. And when mm-hmm. she married, like that's kind of when like most people just did it. Not that it's related, but just like that just seemed like the normal trajectory. And yeah. most people kind of found the person they wanted to marry and start a family with, if they wanted a family, around that age. So like for a while, like everybody was kind of off doing their thing, like career wise, everything's different. So it's hard to like talk deeply about your own career when you know that like nobody in the group really is in that. Not everyone is married. Certainly not everyone had children. So it kind of defaulted
What's
to like,
what's the mix you think of people who are married and not married out of the,
at this point, it's like 7 out of 10 now
are married. And how many have kids?
All 7.
Okay. So it's like, so basically 7 are married with kids, 3 are single mm-hmm. or not, yeah. not married.
Yeah. There's nobody okay. that's like not married and has children, for example.
Right. Or married without kids.
Or married and doesn't have kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
And since like most married relatively late, it was basically like, because like, you're the person I am going to procreate with. So, mm-hmm. so it's basically like, there's less
marriage than, and like, having kids is very correlated here.
Very highly correlated. Yeah. So like the time when there were people who were married but didn't have children was like 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right, so right, that's right. that's kind of the thing. Just something about like that whole, and then like everyone pushing 40 or, you know, passing that mark. Just suddenly it was just like one of the girls was like, you know what? Fuck it. My marriage is a mess.
Damn.
So like it defaulted to like lowest common denominator chat a lot, like politics, you know, news stuff, you know, tea, stuff like that. With the occasional like working group to really hash out a problem with like a job or vetting a boyfriend or a fiance or, you know, husband or something like that. But now that like the majority are married and like in the trenches of this whole deal, it's like the gloves just came off. They're like, fuck it, you know, I need help here and I don't know where to go. So I mean, just laying it out on the table.
I gotta say that's interesting, because like my equivalent group chat, which is all high school and early college friends, like mm-hmm. I don't think anyone would actually say that. And I assume that they do have marriage issues. Some mm-hmm. of them have said it one-on-one with me in private. Mm-hmm. Not in the chat, but like when we hang out in real life, but it never comes out in a chat of like 6 people.
Yeah.
So that's pretty, I don't know if it's like women are like more, attuned or like willing to discuss that in a group environment, but like, my friends don't say anything about their marriage.
It took one friend who was, I guess, the most don't give a fuck in that moment to start it. Mm. And then after that, like everyone just pitched in.
Open the
gate.
Yeah,
that just slammed the gate, threw the gate open, and all of it came out.
Wow. Okay.
And it's been just a constant churn, just hashing it out. So it all started
from one person, and then everyone was like, "All right, yeah. Well, she's going to say it. I'll say it."
Yeah. I mean, wow. I think there was a lot of implicit pressure to keep up appearances, especially since. Like the girl who married super young, she kind of had to put up the front that like that was the good decision, unequivocally. Nothing bad about it. Would choose again. 10 out of 10. Here's life is great.
But just so out of the seven married friends, are all of them like, you know, making these complaints, or is it, you know, half of them, or, you know?
A good mix. So some, there's a couple of marriages in trouble. But like for the rest, like even if it's like generally good, then just like, I'm kind of noticing some weird things going on. This wasn't what I signed up for. What can we do about it now before it turn like snowballs into a problem?
Yeah.
Or like, is this a problem?
Stuff like that. I was interested in this topic because I've been married I've been married before. I'm currently married, and I had I you know this. I'm just repeating it for the audience, but I was married before once too, and that came to an end. I think we were married for six or seven years, and it just no kids, but like yeah, dysfunctional. I know what a dysfunctional marriage is like. Mm, I don't know if it's like their dysfunctional marriage, but I was in one for sure. And then I just found it interesting because I just kind of want to know because my friends are so reticent. And I will say, I think my friends are actually really good husbands.
Probably, I believe it.
I think, I mean, from what I see of them, I think they're really active and committed to their dadly duties. But no one, in rare cases, I did, you know, I talked with friends about how they were like dissatisfied or worried about their marriage. And that only came up. I kind of like the fact that I got divorced. I kind of was for a brief period, like your friend who came out and just said it. I kind of like open for a brief period. I kind of did open the gates a little bit for people to start telling me. They're like, okay, well, this guy gets it. Your fucking marriage ended, so I feel like I can tell you things.
Yeah. I mean, there's just a part of this that I feel is just kind of like shedding the insecurity of youth, you know?
Yeah.
Like the needing to kind of front or put on a good face. And it's like, no, life is hard and it's shorter than we'd like, you know?
Yeah. And relationships are dysfunctional. They just are. They're, I mean, and it's very rare to get a fully perfect functional relationship. Like it's just hard.
The odds are certainly not in your favor, you know? Yeah. And the best you can do is like manage risk. That's the best you can do.
Yeah.
And there's no guarantees. I mean, it's scary. And then I think we're just in a uniquely bad climate to foster a good relationship. So it's like you're up against every single possible headwind.
All right, let's talk about these dudes because I'm curious, like, what the scope of the problem is. You know, because I've observed. I don't know. I guess I'm just are my friends and Shan's friends and stuff. Like, I don't really get the sense that the husbands are checked out or have problems. But I have heard a lot of stories about people where, like, I heard about, for example, one of my nephew's friends has a father who is completely addicted to gaming, and he comes home from work, doesn't talk to anyone in the family, locks himself in his room. And like a teenager, just games all night until he passes out.
Dude, you know, that's been a real thing. I didn't really, really understand, you know, gaming, but like through this new like version of this new evolution of the phase of the girl chat. And then, you know, our latest thing is just like trading "Am I the asshole" threads from Reddit back and forth. Yeah. And that took me down a hole. Like Reddit is a really interesting place. Like you can explore many, many different dimensions of human nature. Some are really dark too.
It's anonymous social media, you know, that it just lets it lets people take their gloves off rather than having to be like, you know, Instagram or Facebook where your face is tied to your account.
So it gets really raw. And I know people say, well, not all of it is possibly real. Like I sure, but I don't care. And having done this much living, like there's a truthiness to a lot of this. It's like no one would go to the effort to do this for no good reason. Nobody's getting clout off this. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason to hold it at arm's length so much.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Just generally, it's like, I didn't understand like two things, just the nature of it seemed like there's a lot of male escapism going on. And I think the common, like you said, checking out, right? So I think that's what it looks like from the outside, just disengaging. But it feels like thinking through it, it's a form of like, it is checking out, but it's like in denial of reality, like hops, like trying to hop into some alternate reality where, you know, life just isn't what they signed up for.
Did it get worse after they had kids, you think? Or was
some of them.
Yeah.
Some of them.
Yeah.
And that was really sad and scary to listen to. Like especially since most of the girls who got married, you know, well into their 30s, which means they were vetting a long time, you know, kind of saw, you know, came up in their own careers, gained a sense of themselves as people at a certain point of maturity, and then, you know, knew or at least thought they knew what they were looking for in a partner.
What were the criteria?
Was like generally had his shit together. So not excessive. So I think
were they
think
similar age? Like they married men close to their
So like within like 3 to 5 years, either way.
Okay, so some married younger, some married older, but not like
but like within a tight age range.
I'd say five year. Where the woman is 5 years older than the man, I feel like is a little bit can be tricky. Because women already, I think women already have a head start over men in terms of like emotional maturity and control. Mm-hmm. That age in the other way can exacerbate. Whereas I think that older men might be like, if it's a 5 year gap with a man is older, they might be actually matched in terms of emotional age.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it.
But anyway.
Yeah, that particular one, the man is 5 years older, but it worked out. He's kind of immature anyway.
You have to have some slack, and you know what I mean?
Like he's at a dinner table, and like he, if your finger's wet and it rubs against like a wine glass, you can make a little fart sound.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's just like making little thumb farts in the corner there.
Let's do this all night.
Good for you, buddy.
Yeah, good. Go in the corner and go fart your wine glass.
So, you know, part of it was I just sort of wondered if there was a little bit of an abrupt shock to the system. So it made me wonder, like, are men not properly socialized for the transition to like husbandhood and fatherhood? There's something to some kind of like mental break, and it takes a bit of work and understanding to properly get across it. And if they don't, they fail. That was a sense. And the second one is like this video game and porn thing is way more of a thing than I ever thought it was.
Oh yeah. Huge. Nobody talks about it. They talk a little bit more about the gaming stuff, but I mean, not really, because
that's the visible one. Because that's the thing you can see the guy doing, like walking by his.
It's
desk
also more socially acceptable,
right?
You know, you're not a fucking perv for being like, oh yeah, I'm really into games, you know. But if you're like, oh yeah, I'm a gooner, or whatever it's called, it's like, is that what's called gooning? And
I think so. I don't know. I don't know what the kids call it.
But like. Just like marathon porn is a thing that happens.
I fully believe it. So like a big thing for the husbands that end up checking out, it always accompanies like physical isolation. So they get like their own little like office or room or something, and then they just hole up.
You know, I used to have that as a long-term goal. Mm-hmm. Was a house that had a sort of like a detached garage for me.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I, you know, it's interesting. Like when I mean, this was a long time ago, and I for some reason I was like fixated on this idea of sort of having like a physical place of isolation where I could be alone.
I don't feel that way anymore.
In fact, my wife just like I spend almost. I spent every day in a rather small apartment with my wife, and I'm happy as can be. But she was just gone for like 3 days. She went on a trip without me, with her family. I couldn't go because I had work. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what I was like. I don't know what to do with myself. What I'm saying is, I think I know the feeling both of wanting that sort of like isolation and being checked out versus not really having that, you know, that's why I'm interested. I'm just like, I wonder if these guys are like me when I was, you know, checked out.
I think so. And like the pandemic really did a number
yeah.
on some of these marriages.
Sure.
Right. So it's people who, like, I worked from home, and I'm by nature, I'm kind of a gremlin anyway.
Yeah.
So that was barely any kind of transition at all. It's just, I had to stand in lines to get groceries more. That's literally the only, like, actual thing that was different about my life when the pandemic hit. Yeah. For a lot of these couples, it's people who were used to working in offices, or some were doctors, so working in clinics and stuff like that, just having to, like, hole up right where they were. So they might not have been in, like, the home they were planning on, just a tight, confined space. And then everyone just kind of got holed up and then started acting like stressed lab rats in way too tight confines. So I think there's like a psychological, like, distancing thing going on. And then without, like, properly correcting it, like, over the years, it just kind of snowballs into something more. And then checking out.
Let me ask you a question about your friends. Dominance the wrong word, but, well, okay. Do you think they have hand in their marriage? Like, are they somewhat dominant personalities in their marriage, or are they more passive and want the guy to lead? And
I mean, it really ranges. I have conservative Christian girlfriends who abide by, you know, a particular, you know, understanding of what a biblical marriage is that includes, like, wifely submission, you know?
Within certain confines, right? Like, if the guy strayed from a certain pattern or strayed from a certain ideal that she had for the man, like, would she exercise control there, or would she just sort of say, you know, hey, he's his own man? You know?
That hasn't really, I haven't seen that tested, so I can't say.
Okay.
But the girls that married a little later, obviously they come into this with some, like, career standing, their own income. Options.
I've never found that correlates with, you know, how they behave at home.
Really?
You know, like, I think there's a lot of, like, high earning women who are super confident in their careers who at home are, like, more or less docile.
No, you know what? I can understand that.
Yeah,
I can see that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like code switching, I think, that goes on.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not a negative term. I never understood why that's considered such a negative thing. I just see it as, like, done. I don't know how you can really be sane without some level of healthy code switching. So it's like a friend who has a super high powered, stressful job wants to come home and then kind of not have to, like, order the house around or, like, order her husband around or something like that. Would prefer that things just kind of have its own rhythm and take a back seat.
Yeah.
Does that kind of answer that? The
reason I'm asking this is just because, you know, I'm just curious, like, what the nature of their relationships are like. Like, do they, you know, are they demanding, or are they just sort of, like, passively waiting for the husband to do his shit?
You know? I mean, it's sad because it seems like there was a lot of passive waiting. In the most toxic cases, it's like that waiting was taken as, like, a permission slip. Like, oh, like, extra room to be shitty, you know?
Are we talking, like, about, like, being unfaithful? Like, cheating?
There's a little bit of, like, you know, hitting up some girls' OnlyFans or something like that. But I'm talking about, like, slowly letting go of their share of the housework or childcare.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like gradually realizing that they don't have to change all of the poopy diapers. Just watch the baby until mom comes home, and then she'll do it.
Yeah.
So kind of a manipulation and taking advantage of your partner because they keep not saying anything, but she doesn't want to say it because she's expecting, she wants to be, you know, she wants to be respectful and wants to be considerate. Especially if there's, like, they're all two income families, except for, like, one.
Yeah.
So everyone's got a lot of pressure on their time. Everyone's tired. Everyone's got stuff to do. At the end of the day, if dad kind of loosens his grip on childcare, mom is going to step up, right? Mom's not going to let her kids stew in a poopy diaper to passive aggressively wait until husband steps in.
So, it's so like meaning that there is this sort of like, I'm not saying that this is the problem, but like there is a built in sort of, well, if I don't do it, she's going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of that. And yeah. The scary thing is how fast that can snowball.
Oh yeah.
Like, okay, you can kind of like be a little bit, you can kind of be a little lazy about the childcare. You know, what's it matter? I don't, you know, if I'll just take a little bit longer to wash the dishes. And if I wait long enough, then mom's going to just wash them after dinner anyway.
Can I surmise then that we're really even talking about just sort of the basic being a father, head of a household type mm-hmm. responsibilities. We're not even talking about, hey, are you in love still? Like that's not,
oh yeah,
that's gone.
We're not in that.
Yeah.
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 I mean, all of them will say they love their husbands and their families, of course. And I have no reason to doubt it. Mm-hmm. It's just the daily mechanics of living.
Do they though? Do they really love them? You know what I mean?
Like, so.
Not in an abstract like sense, but
overtly they... toxic.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Where they're so they're
in love.
Like...
So you're saying they are genuinely in love, but the husband is just not pulling weight? Because I feel mm-hmm. like if that's the issue, then there's no issue. You just tell him to get his shit together, and if he loves you, he'll listen.
That's where it gets a little tricky.
That's why I don't really believe it.
It sounds like
sounds like woman talking a little too positively. And maybe I don't think the husbands are really, I mean, if they feel that way about their husband, I don't think the husband's reciprocating. And then, so they're not.
I think so. Yeah. I think there's a lopsided investment in the relationship. The big disclaimer here is that most of these marriages with children are still actually kind of young marriages.
Right. We're talking like married in the last like, and they just turned 40.
Maybe a five-year court.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they met like 5 years ago, married 4 or 3 years ago, and they have a kid or two.
Wow. They only knew this guy for a year and then got married.
Well, this is app culture plus the pressure of it was a struggle. If you were committed to if you absolutely decided that you wanted marriage and children, and especially for women, that clock doesn't go nearly as long as men does. You kind of have to be on the ball about it. So I know a friend of mine who just really made it kind of a third job. To just find a husband, like pushed herself to like be on the apps, vet carefully, but like cast a wide net, and then just kind of do her best, and then go from there. And it worked. It's a good marriage.
She may have gotten lucky. You know
she
what I
recognized
mean? Like
that.
Even
yeah.
with all the filters, you may still just have to get lucky.
You absolutely do. Because I know friends who have done similar things and just cannot seem to catch a break.
Right. Right.
And there's no like objectively like, oh, why did you not like this guy? There's no objectively good partner, right? You have to feel it. So that makes it extra difficult. Mm-hmm. And not only do you have to like them now, you have to have an eye towards who they're going to be 5, 10, 50 years from now. There's too many moving parts here, so I can easily see why people get overloaded.
That's untenable, in my opinion.
It's untenable,
no way.
So you kind of have to like bottle the neurosis and then channel it in productive ways. That you know, like a 6-month plan or a 1-year plan. You can't do a 50-year plan.
Yeah.
So these are kind of young marriages too. That's going back to what you were originally asking. So, I have no reason to believe that they wouldn't say that they're both in love and committed and love their family. If nothing else, if they have children, then they love their families.
You mean the men, the women who we're talking about?
Well, the women do.
The women, of course they do. I mean, because I think the reality these days is that I think families, especially healthy families these days, we're living in a more matriarchal culture. And I don't mean that as a sort of masculine panic kind of guy. I just mean that like we don't have, we really don't have, in my opinion, and maybe this is good, we don't really have the kind of men, like we're not developing the kind of men that would insist on sort of a patriarchal family. I think that men in many ways are looking for matriarchal figures. Like, you know what I mean? Like female.
That's certainly how it pans out, I think.
Yeah.
Like I said, like conservative Christian, Christian marriage. Kind of funny thing that happened with the kids is, like he's from a Mandarin speaking family. She's Canto. Mm. And it caused a bit of strife in the family that, because second generation, so not really like a fluent Canto speaker, but her parents speak Cantonese. Mm-hmm. And of course, like the grandparents are going to try to teach their grandchildren Cantonese if they talk to them, all of that. And because, you know, you're more likely to bring in, you know, your own parents as opposed to like your mother-in-law's parents when you have a newborn and a toddler, the kids kind of ended up learning, becoming a little bit more fluent in Cantonese. Mm-hmm. And then, and that caused some strife in the family because then, like, you know, the dad's family is like, well, these kids aren't learning Mandarin. And, you know, this is, you know, that's an outrage. You should be teaching them Mandarin. Like, I can't teach my kids Mandarin. I don't speak it. Your son doesn't speak it.
Well, that's a father-in-law problem, right?
Yeah. But it kind of made me see that, like, the kids were kind of being molded by the mom's family more than the dad's family. And dad is perfectly fine with this.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so in terms of like transmitting mm-hmm. culture or the immersion that the kids are getting, it kind of trends maternal.
I think so. I think that that is true.
So I think you could, like, knock-on effect would be like kind of what you're describing, that families are tilting more towards like being shaped and identified by the mother's side.
Yeah, I think I'm just talking out of my ass, you know, that's what I do. But I think that this insistence that we live in a patriarchy is kind of keeping, making it hard to understand like what the fuck is going on with dudes, you know, because if it is a patriarchal society, then why are men like so often checked out like this? Because you would think that they'd be busy exercising patriarchal dominance. You'd think that they'd be micro... You know, the problem, when I grew up in what I would call a more patriarchal family, though my mom was resistant to it. So I think I kind of had both, actually. It was like a clash of a dominant matriarch and a pretty dominant patriarch, too. But the classic patriarchal figure to me is someone who is constantly probing and micromanaging all aspects of the household, trying to control everyone. And in fact, it's the woman who's trying to retreat a little bit from his control. Like, isn't that the story that we grew up with in terms of, you know, the dangers of patriarchy and the all-controlling father figure?
Yeah, they're out of step. The expectations, I think, still exist, and we all subconsciously know them. And some men might want, you know, might identify their masculinity with following that template, but it simply does not line up with the demands of modern life. Like, I saw some red pill chart talking about what a proper, like, patriarchal, you know, family looks like. And it's a series of like umbrellas. So, you know, father, husband is at the top, who protects, and then mother is underneath that, and then children at the very bottom there. And then it describes the job title. So husband, father is like the provider for the family, caretaker, provides protection. And like, let's get real here. Like, women work too. Women have to work.
Yeah.
So where does this idea of the provider falls flat? I know a lot of I run into a lot of marriages where that seems to kind of run into friction because both parties work, in other words, bring in money, provide money for the family, but then mom somehow also has to take on a greater burden of childcare and house care because that's, you know, the woman's duty.
Yeah.
Like the husband just does not do that.
Classic patriarchy, you know, and
yeah. I mean, that's the family that's the family structure I grew up in. So both of my parents were high achieving careerists, but they both have PhDs, both, you know, worked outside the home. But I have literally never seen my dad, you know, like mop a floor. Cooking is like either warming up stuff my mom made or like frozen TV dinners. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she had to run the entire house. Like we occasionally had like housekeepers and stuff to kind of take up the load of like cleaning and stuff. But like she, you know, if we needed help with homework, that was my mom. If anything needed to be done around the house, that was my mom. And you know, a lot of these really like pro patriarchy guys would be like, well, who are you going to call when your car breaks down? The fucking mechanic.
Yeah.
I don't really see a lot of husbands changing and fixing an engine block out there. Hey. Not a lot of husbands are sitting on the porch with a shotgun because of the marauders.
I mean, the guy, like, that's such a caricature too of like what we even mean by patriarchy.
Like, yeah, so it's like a cartoon that no one really understands. How does it apply to modern life here?
Yeah,
like if me as a woman, if I'm supposed to take on a man because he's gonna like protect me, it'd be like that's a little costly to me. I know what my protection needs are, and I don't need a whole nother like man boss for that.
Because I guess I'm bringing that up just because it seems like the issue that they're having with their husbands is sort of the inverse of patriarchy, right? Patriarchy to me means that the man believes that he should exercise his preferences over everyone, that he should be the ultimate decider. He needs to be actively engaged and part of all decision making. That's a patriarch, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas this is an opposite problem. It's like this guy doesn't want to be involved in any of the decision making. He doesn't want to be involved.
Well, it's not clear. These lines aren't clear. So there's no real set template. Like even, you know, what does it mean to really lead the family? What does that mean? Like,
well, at a psychological subjective level for the man, it's hard for me to think about to put myself in that position because I'm more like the modern soy man who just wants to have his freedom. But I would say that the classic patriarch, you know, is someone who is just highly anal retentive about what his family is like and how it presents. And, you know, if family says something about me in public and you have to be a certain way, you got to behave a certain way in public. You kids have to dress and behave a certain way in public because I'm the man, you represent me when I'm out, you know, socially in the world, and you're going to behave the way I want you to behave. You know, that to me is that sort of like notion of the subjective feeling of like dominion over the family for like a classic patriarch. And I don't think that men are quite like that anymore.
I think that's, I don't want to speak out of turn here, but from what I'm seeing from the outside, I wonder if men are having some difficulty reconciling with that. That this is the expectation that, you know, maybe they consciously or subconsciously internalize and what they actually want out of their married lives and fatherhood. Mm. And, you know, the constraints placed upon them by their material reality around them.
Yeah, it could be.
When it talks to like leading a family, like I remember when my mom traveled, the house freaking fell apart. My dad didn't know where anything was. Like if a problem happened, like just couldn't really figure it out. My dad leaves and things work fine. Fruit. I'm not disparaging my dad. Just describing, you know, what I saw as a kid.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then my brother and I, we talked about it later and like, well, then in that case, like who's actually leading the family? Mm. You know, the person whose absence caused the house to fall apart is probably the one that would be like a classic, like the leader. Mm-hmm. That's how it would work in a business. Mm. I've never seen a leader I respected as a boss whose presence like didn't really matter to the operations of the thing. So I wonder if like men are struggling with reconciling that, because I think there is a huge mismatch between what we think of as like quote a manly man, a masculine man, and what being a successful husband and father actually entails.
These days, right?
These days.
Because I do think the standards are a little different these days, especially because women are, they're getting married later. They're often coming in with their own careers. They don't strictly need the husband. The husband is sort of optional, really. I mean,
yeah.
it's a hard thing to get, you know, lose. But on the other hand, if you have a husband that's not functional, it's kind of a liability beyond just being a single mom, you know, maybe with a dad that has to kick in child support payments, but
the day we learned the term married single mom kind of changed the game.
Wow.
It's apparently just a known, just a phenomenon. You know, women are talking about it where, you know, the woman can be technically married. The father will be in the home, but she's shouldering all of the burden, including earning money. So at that point, she's basically a single mother with a deadbeat.
I think we got to name this podcast "Married Single Mother."
I think that fully encapsulates it. Like as soon as you know, a friend dropped it in the chat. Like, dude, this is a thing. This is a thing. And then like three hands go up. Like, that's my life. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
I kind of want to wonder if like men falling into video games. Porn maybe is kind of reasserting some like masculinity in a sense in a home environment that doesn't belong.
Here's the thing. I think that this is my personal view. I do not speak on behalf of all men, but I have had experience, you know. I've had some experience being in a dysfunctional marriage, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I would say that this concept of wounded masculinity is maybe a little bit overrated as an explanation.
Okay.
I don't really wounded male pride. There is that, but I don't think that's at exceptionally high levels or anything like that. You know, maybe it is. I don't know. I'm just speaking from what my experience is. But I do think that men are just really selfish. Mm-hmm. Not always, but I think that there's a very selfish phase in life, which is a sort of adolescent phase. And the problem is we're not graduating out of that quick enough. Whatever it is, for whatever reason, I think it's because we live in a consumer economy. I know I tend to put all blame on that, but I do think that it is a very big deal.
Well, we live in a consumerist and an individualist situation.
Yeah, and that's closely intertwined. I think the individualism comes directly out of the consumer mandate. Mm-hmm.
So that requires like glorification of the self, literal self-centeredness. Yeah.
Self-centeredness, and above all, is the mandate for self, for sort of self-satisfaction, self-indulgence, and
I hear it in like the mental health discourse. Like, if you're feeling a bad thing, that it's bad is the problem, and you need to like fix that right away. Not like, well, what was causing it? You need to work through that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, I think if you get to the root of it, you could change a lot of things very quickly. Mm-hmm. I do believe that. I've experienced that.
No, it's true.
Need to go one by one by one and fixing a bunch of different... I mean, you do that, but I think it starts with a more fundamental shift in consciousness and perspective. And that tends to create a domino effect where a lot of the problems... I think start to slowly turn, maybe not all at once, but you're on that general trajectory of like, okay, I you're now able to see the problems, right?
Yeah.
And I think that the problem is that, men become, they're like wolves. There's a lot of, living for oneself and also predatory behavior. Especially at the more extreme ends.
Yeah, I wonder about that. Like, especially these days. Sorry to cut
you
off.
No. Yeah, go ahead.
But just being like just having worked in like male dominated industries, you know, watching like young men, you know, work through their 20s and 30s, being in like tech and everything. There's a kind of like sociopathy that's heavily prioritized and rewarded in men, particularly. Yeah. I mean, for everyone in general. Like, if I turn the sociopath switch on, I know I can go further, right? But it's like we don't really have any mechanism to say, okay, now's when you stop or you turn it off. We don't have any modulation for that. So I don't know how you tell young men to be like, focus on yourself, build yourself up, prioritize yourself, you know, just pedal to the metal in your career or sex life or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you get married and then like, what? I haven't heard anything about that transition.
Right. And so that's why I think, you know, the spreadsheets and stuff are great in terms of like just sort of like basic, I would say like inherent issues of like fitness and ability. Like, is the guy smart? Is he capable? Is he hardworking? Can he run fast, basically, is what you're asking of this animal. Mm-hmm. And that's not a bad place to start. But I think when it comes to the human, like it's just incomplete because you've got to look at the evolution of the man. Have they progressed beyond the and the biggest problem is that this is the core, this is the starting point for all people in our society, is a self-centered individual who is above all prioritizing self-satisfaction and self-indulgence as the highest value.
Yeah.
And that's not an exaggeration.
No, absolutely not. I mean, it's true for young women. That's the base
reality. Yeah.
And I know a lot of women kind of go through a depression because we're also heavily still socialized, like the cult of the mom and the wife, right? Mm-hmm. The inverse of that, the ultimate like self-sacrificing, self-effacing figure who, you know, dedicates her life and effort towards the care and well-being of, you know, her family, right? So I know a lot of women who kind of go through a period of like depression or psychosis. It feels a little like postpartum light, you know, with the shift to like wifehood and motherhood.
Sorry, you're talking about, what are you trying to say? Are you saying women get the opposite messaging that they shouldn't be self-indulgent? Or
no, I think it's the same thing. Like, you know, like go get 'em girl, you know, girl boss stuff and, you know, YOLO and all of that. We're equally subject to those selfish, materialistic, individualist pressures.
Sure, yeah, of course. It's just women are not exempt. You're supposed to be spending money too.
Yeah. It's just that there's a hard back stuff, which is like a very, very old archetype that when you do get married, and have children, like your life flips.
I see.
So I think women have an easier switch because that's in the back of our minds. We know that that's expected of us and we're signing up for it. I am not that clear if men really generally go into this thinking that way.
Also, personally, I think what I've observed, obviously, you know, is that the process of childbirth is a thing that sort of often creates a level of self-awareness and consciousness that cuts through a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas men don't quite have that experience.
Yeah.
So there's like an inbuilt biological threshold when it comes to motherhood.
Yeah, you have invested a lot into this. Your brain has to flip the switch and be like, all right, this is your life now.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And it's a physical process, right? Like it triggers things that I think cultural messaging may not quite be able to override. It tries, but I think it's a very powerful thing that happens with the mom that the dad doesn't really have. Like there isn't a true, and in fact, I've heard a lot of men who are honest say that having kids was kind of disturbing because that switch never happened for them. They're like, I didn't quite fall in love with the baby. Like, I still don't quite love my kid the way I've been told I'm supposed to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there is that difference. I do think that the female is on a different path than the man. Mm-hmm. And the female's path is of, I think, greater, like, I'm just being honest here. I think it's of greater, like, sort of, it has more dramatic and serious, like, twists and turns that are built into the experience, whereas men can very easily lead an anonymous, meaningless life where nothing ever happens.
Yeah. The term for you guys is space monkeys.
Oh, is that what they call us?
Kind of, you know, like the biological purpose, so to speak, for men, like eggs are expensive. Sperm is extremely cheap.
Yes.
Yeah. Nigh on like nominal cost is zero, basically.
Yeah.
So like not all men are supposed to make it to adulthood, for one thing. Supposed to be like meat, you know, cannon fodder, space monkeys. You guys are the R&D department. Do the crazy side quest, the crazy dangerous side quest. And whoever survives comes back. Maybe you drop some sperm somewhere. And that's how we keep chugging along.
Yeah.
And a lot of the archetypes about masculinity kind of support this really, this notion of like the purpose of a man. Like how many times have you heard, like you just mentioned, like talking about men as like wolves or something, hunters, right?
Yes.
The transition is then like a benefactor, an elder, a leader, a provider. Like none of that shit really applies
Wait. Hold on. Let me complete that thought though. That's not what I mean.
Okay. Oh.
One by wolf, I do think that it's interesting to me because I think we glorify the wolf, whereas I think the wolf lives a brutish short life. It's a horrible life that the wolf has to leave. But there is a sort of like there is a sort of juvenile idealization of the predator, of the apex predator.
Yeah, you can smell the testosterone coming off of that.
Yeah,
you know.
But it's actually kind of sad. It's a sad life. Especially
that's what I mean though.
For social animals like us. Like wolves live in very small and temporary packs, right? Mm-hmm. That are unstable. Whereas human beings, like we want to have stable, long-term and large, you know, social networks. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the evolution, in my experience, is not to go from wolf to some even grander, grandiose thing. It's actually to be tamed into like a dog.
Yeah, see, that's it. Okay?
That's the thing nobody wants to admit about men is like, we kind of need to be like, literally housebroken. And
such a big shift. That's a bigger shift in function and purpose and meaning and self-identity than the one like women go through to transition from like single woman to married woman.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible describes marriage as two oxen equally yoked.
Okay.
So like literally cows.
Mm.
You know, like
very workhorse. Docile. Yeah.
Like docile, reliable, and can pull a freaking heavy load.
Yeah.
So reliable, stable, and able to do a shit ton of work.
The reason
with another like animal.
The reason like that analogy troubles me a little bit is just because I don't believe in the fundamental equality of men and women. I think that men are more likely to go rogue and unyoked. And it's just patently true. I mean, just look at all of the pathological behaviors in the world. And it's almost always men that are by far the most prevalent. I'm not saying that no women do this, but like who kills? Who drives drunk? Who commits crimes? Who commits domestic violence? Now, I'm not saying it's always men, but it's vast majority men. And I think that the likelihood of one of which gender is going to go off yoke, it's going to be the man.
Mm-hmm.
Much more likely to go rogue, to go wild, to lose his fucking mind is the man.
Body of law seems to support that basic notion.
Yeah.
This is one of the big things that the red pill hyper focuses on, right? Yeah. That the courts are rigged against husbands and fathers or something, mm-hmm. like in favor of the mother. Like, okay, if you have young children, who are you going to leave them with? Seriously.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, like, I'm sure there are some guys who are the exception to this. Many guys are the exception to this. But if you look at the positive cases of people who just, you know, the worst shit that's done is almost always men. So, you know, I'm sure people are going to object to that, but just look up the fucking stats and explain the stats to me. You know what I mean? And
yes.
And I just don't think that there's any reason to be as a man, to be defensive about men. I think we should be realistic about men, because I think that once, because I think there's a lot there, you know, like I've seen the difference between someone who's stuck in that adolescent self-centered phase. I mean, I've experienced the difference between someone who's stuck in that self-centered adolescent phase and becoming more like less self-centered. And the reason you do that is not just simple altruism and I want to be a better person, but also because I think that what needs to happen in modern life, which is because, like, you know, we no longer have any traditions around this, is that men need to face the prospect of self-annihilation and get the fear of God into them before they're willing to turn things around. And that, I believe, is just a lot of shit to ask from a woman who's also raising your kids.
That's what I mean. That's that kind of like big picture, like where the cracks forming. Yeah. Big picture, that's kind of that's kind of what I've been thinking for the last like month or so, as long as like this process has been going on.
Like, I'll be honest, those dudes that are locking themselves in a room with games and porn and not paying attention to their families, there's a fucking journey that those guys need to go through to get to the point where they see something and experience something that scares them so badly that they turn around. But why that should not be something that the woman needs to guide him through. She can't.
Yeah.
She's too fucking busy with her own shit.
Yeah. And it's by function. I don't think it works.
It doesn't.
It's too easy. Like, a friend described like her deep frustration trying to, because she works, she brings in like 50, she brings like 45% of the income. Husband brings in 55, but he made it, but like he doesn't, he barely does house care or childcare or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Like, only, you know, when asked, he still calls it babysitting. That's the kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then like,
meaning she takes care of the kids, he calls it babysitting.
Yeah. And right. then like literally treats it like a babysitter. So right. the kid is hungry. Unless the food is right on hand, he's not going to go prepare a bottle or food or whatever.
Yeah. Kids, see, just that dude, hungry. That dude is so checked out and he's so wrapped up in his own self-indulgence. And he's so in that wolf phase that he can't even really see his own connection to his own family. And he calls it babysitting, and, you know, he treats the kid as if it's a stranger's kid.
Yeah. And then like they argue about it and be like, well, I provide money. And it's like, bitch, I provide the money too. But I have a whole second and third shift at home once I get out of that. What the fuck, bro?
It's a fucking rationalization. Let's put it this way. I don't think they should even have arguments with the man about that. If you're a man, if you're a father and a husband, and your argument is, well, I bring the money, so don't ask me anymore. You don't want to be in that fucking family, and you don't want to have those kids. Like, you don't want to be there. You know what I mean? And I think what they're doing is, if you ask me, I think what they're doing is, like, they're using the fact that they're married and the fact that they're fathers to sort of avoid doing the thing that they need to do. Because in their minds, they're still able to keep this illusion of having it all together, of being like a properly socialized man, a happy man, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that they have the objective dressing of that, of being a husband and a father, allows them to paper over the fact that they're not really there.
Like, yeah, because from the outside, this is the ideal. This is the quote intact nuclear family. With a mother, with a woman and man at the head.
I mean, think about it. If what he really should do, I mean, if that was my attitude, right, is like, look, I come home with the paycheck, so don't ask me anything more, right? I do my part, you do fucking your part. Well, you know what you really should do then? Get divorced and get yourself on the hook for child support payments.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
If all you're saying is, if all you are, by your own admission, is a check.
Yeah.
Then just drop it in the mail.
Just drop it in the mail and move the fuck out and free me up. Like, I don't want to deal with your shit anymore. But he doesn't want to do that because I think that a lot of, especially as you get older, it gets even more scary. You know, and you're, because you're facing existential problems.
Yeah.
Like, these are deep fucking problems. And a lifetime of gaming and self-indulgence means that you've overlooked these things that in the past we took seriously. At least I think we did. More seriously. Issues about meaning, issues about maturity, issues about your relationship with, let's put it, the
your social relations and ties.
Social relations, and also your relationship with the eternal, right?
Yeah.
Matters of
austerity,
the spirit.
Legacy, etc.
Yeah, and matters of the spirit.
Your own soul.
Right? Yeah. We're embarrassed of these topics now because we have no basis to think. We don't have to think, feel like we have the right to think about this stuff. I mean, men get made fun of this shit if we think about it.
If you're young, corny.
You're like, what? Fuck it. Look, this matters, right? But when you're younger, you're not supposed to take any of this stuff seriously. And no one tells you to take it seriously. Everyone just tells you to fucking, you know, relax, fucking chill out, enjoy life. You know what I mean? And then...
Yeah, if it's a young guy, like, go out and get laid or something.
Yeah. Like, all life becomes... You know, this is what really makes me fucking irritated these days. And I'm very... I'm turning stereotypically cantankerous as I get older, and I don't care. Is that, you know, like, there's just this... Everyone's so fucking cool. You know? Everyone's always so fucking cool.
Blasé and emotionally neutered.
Yeah, but you know what? You're not cool when you're alone and you're facing... you know, oblivion. You know what I mean? And you don't have the vocabulary and you don't have the foundation to deal with that. And so you just retreat and retreat and retreat into dumber, but also more intense forms of self-gratification up to hard drugs. It happens.
Yep.
Surprisingly, I think people would be very surprised at who's fucking on hard drugs. And, you know, and so...
Oh, that came out in a big way. You know, that study that talked about, like, drug usage in among white collars. Man, we have a problem here.
A real problem, yeah. You know, because it's a retreat. This is a retreat. Because the problems that we face are so terrifying, but they're also completely personal and nameless, meaning these are not problems that are socialized. These are not problems for which we have any communal or cultural answer to. We don't even recognize that they exist. They're completely couched as personal failings. And so, you know, I think, but on the other hand, a man must go out into the wild. He must confront his greatest fear. And, you know, we may think that that's getting into a street fight, which is why a lot of men are like, I'm going to train for a fight. But I'm sorry, it's really getting into a fight is really not nearly as terrifying as, you know,
tying
falling
along
into a spiritual abyss. You know what I mean?
This is the end of part one of a two-part podcast. The second part will be up on our Patreon feed. If you want access to bonus episodes, go to patreon.com/planetameg.